Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today is Wednesday, Wide Open Wednesday, February 4th, the year of our Lord, 2026. This is Coffee with J.C. Sherbert. Hope you're having a fantastic morning and a fantastic week so far. On the hardwood last night, Gamecocks drop another game. Very competitive game, especially early on. And as the half wore on, it kind of reminded me of the Auburn game a little bit, where Carolina just didn't have enough. To win. Offensive boards were an issue. Second chance points went to Texas 20-7. Gamecocks did manage to have a season high of points in the paint, but Texas is really good from the foul line. The Gamecocks picked up committed a lot of fouls, sent them to the stripe. That was a key to the game. Matt Anderson talked about is Texas does foul a lot. Get to the charity stripe. 84-75 was the final from Austin, Texas. The Gamecocks, it's kind of circling the drain, folks. Probably has been for a while. 11-12 overall, 2-8 in the SEC. This kind of bottoming out losing streak they've been on over the course of the past two seasons and the end of the good one. They've lost 26 of 30 SEC basketball games, 33 of 40 in against power conference competition. That's tough. And, you know, people ask me what I think, and I think, you know, with the stats, it's a bottom line business. You can't lose like that. And I'll freely admit it's a tough job. It's not a great job. There's some things about the job in and of itself. I always talk about team program job that, you know, needs to be corrected regardless of who the coach is. However, you know, there's losing and then there's really bottoming out. And, you know, this program, even with a fraction of the, I guess, alignment that it has now, which, you know, it does have some, has not been like this. And as far as the win and loss record goes, it's so bad. It doesn't even seem like it, right? It just doesn't even, you like, look at the actual numbers of the losses piling up, and maybe it's the losses in other sports and people are just used to it. But, you know, there just needs to be a complete examination of this program from every aspect of it to see if they can't get it right. And, you know, NIL money's part of it. I'll freely admit that. I think that that is part of it. At the same time, you know, you've got to find a way to be competitive. And while they are competitive in basketball games, don't get me wrong, last night was an example of it. Sometimes they aren't, and the wins and losses, that's not a competitive record, so to speak. So I'll leave it at that. The SEC is a tough league still in men's basketball. So I don't know. You know, I don't mean to sound down in the dumps based on a competitive 9-point loss to Texas. And I'm not really. I'm just, you know, this is where we're at right now with that particular sport. But coffee's not a basketball. We'll talk more about that on the show. We've talked a lot of basketball lately. The morning show later today, Mike Morgan is back, and we'll have a JC and Morgan coming up. So this will be a shorter episode of Coffee. Good to get back in the swing of things with Mike on that. He's during basketball season, he's on the road for ESPN. He's on the road for SEC Network. He's on the road for Elite Media Network now. So he's got a lot of hoops. We just need to start calling him Mike Hoops Morgan, right? But really awesome work that Mike's doing out there in the broadcast realm. He's a warrior. You know, I'm not a professional broadcaster, but Mike will sit there and call, get three games a week, and then come back and do a full day of radio, whether it's with us on ITG, whether it's JC and Morgan, whether it's Sirius XM or 680 in Atlanta, which frequently has him co-hosting. My head would explode if I had to talk that much. Because sometimes when I get off the show, I can't even answer the phone. I'm like, I just got to have some quiet for a while. I think it's the headphones. Probably my head's too big, so there's echoes. Oh, are you saying you don't have any brains, JC? Yeah, probably so. But anyway, super excited about getting back with Mike, talking a little college football, big picture stuff. The SEC head coaches meetings are coming up in New Orleans. Would love to be a fly on the wall in those meetings, football. So we'll see how that goes. So JC and Morgan at 9:15, then around 10, We'll get it started with the morning show. Mike will be in. Well, he'll make a seamless transition into ITG with Jamie Bradford, and they will welcome Aaron Fitt from D1 Baseball today. Aaron is one of the most well-known college baseball analysts out there. Curious to see what he thinks about the Gamecocks. I'll say this, the preseason predictions are not good. Most have the Gamecocks ahead of Missouri, and that's it in the 16-team league. We will see. They were 14th last year, so we'll see if maybe they're wrong. And experts can be wrong at times. Well, we all know that. But curious to see what Aaron has to say. And then it's, as I said, wide open Wednesday. That means you do not have to be a club chief member, which you can join on our YouTube channel for the low price of $4.99 a month to get in and interact with us each and every day. But on Wednesdays, we open it up to the people. Everybody could come in. So if you have some questions about football recruiting, basketball, big picture stuff, off topic, I'll answer anything. You guys know me. And right now, I'm working on a return to the internet, like the website side of things. And I'm missing the AMAs on the Big Spur, man. And people would ask about all kinds of stuff. If, once we get a new site up and running, you can look forward to coming in and interacting with me in that way as well. I've, in some ways, getting a break from the message boards is good at times. But man, I've been doing it. Message boards have kind of been a part of what I've done for 20 years. I mean, not everybody remembers this, and I'm not trying to take credit for something that obviously long after I departed the company grew into a monster. But before there was a Rivals main board, and many of you know what I'm talking about here, I got to Rivals in 05, 06, 05, 06, and one of my jobs was get the main, the recruiting, football recruiting board going. Because before, it was a guy named Jeremy Crabtree, who was one of our analysts, good dude. It was just like a post Crabby question, and then he'd answer it. One, no. So anyway, I got in there, started mixing it up, and it grew, and then just a lot of great football fans and a lot of wildness from around the country on the main board happened, and it grew into an absolute monster. And so that's kind of been in my DNA. Like when Twitter came along, and I've had a lot to say about Twitter and some of the stuff out there, because to me it's not real life in a lot of ways. But when Twitter and now it's X came along, it didn't really faze me. The concept of that is that the whole world has a message board now, and I was used to it. So I kind of miss it. And especially, I don't know if I'd ever get back into the national football recruiting main board style of message board again, but I do miss everybody on Plano's PPG at thebigspur.com, and looking forward to getting back into it in some sort of form. Here shortly. So that's my message board take on that. But I thought about the AMA because it's wide open Wednesday. I wanted to say that there's a new tailgate talks up. Tommy Thigpen, former Coastal Carolina quarterback, NFL quarterback, is their guest. You can check out the podcast version on the Chief Sports app. Also go to their YouTube channel at Tailgate Talks 547. Please like and subscribe to that channel as we continue to want them to grow. And that's a great show with Pat DeMarco and Steven Garcia. Podcast version is on our app. Sports Talk streams tonight from 6 to 8 on the Chief Sports app as well. So Jamie had Darren Usher on yesterday, and had a chance to review the interview and lots of great material there. By the way, we cut it so you can check it out commercial free on the Chief Sports South Carolina YouTube channel. Another good in-depth interview. Darren will give you answers, and he's in depth with what he does. And so I was reviewing it, and as I've kind of been working through the positions, there's some positions we're probably going to talk about more than others the whole off season, and we're going to track it, and who's it's all from winter workouts through spring through summer. Guys are up and down. When they form the depth chart, it's all based on football and football practice. Don't get me wrong. I don't think it's possible for, unless a player just either gets injured or screws up and doesn't show for summer workouts, which doesn't happen. Used to happen quite a bit. The voluntary workout era, you'd have problems at certain programs, South Carolina included, at times where guys just wouldn't show over the summer. So that's they're voluntary, right? But I don't hear that. I don't hear of that often these days. But unless somebody like that, they're going to set it based on football. So, but it all matters, So everybody's working toward when you're talking about the individual position rooms moving up, moving down, getting better, improvement. Does somebody pass somebody? Somebody getting faster, stronger, all that good stuff. So we're going to dig into positions quite a bit. There's, I'm not going to, with coffee, sit there and just go through every position once, and then 4 months later, let's go through it again. But there are certain topics that pop up that, we're going to talk about that maybe we don't think about often when we're talking about what's up, what's down. I know the offensive line clearly is going to be a point of emphasis this offseason just because it hasn't been that good. I called it embarrassing yesterday on the show, and that may sound harsh to some folks, but it is because I don't think individually, when you look at the players and look at where they landed, the guys that left, there wasn't a lack of a appetite to sign them. I mean, most of them went Power Four. Most of them went Big Ten or SEC, So, shoot. I mean, it's not like they all dropped down a level. And, and I've said this, when Will Muschamp got to South Carolina, like 24 guys left from the Spurrier roster, and I think only three of them ever played football again. So that was a talent. Some of those guys weren't talented enough. These guys all landed at decent spots. So, Louisville, Michigan State, Purdue, Louisville's in the ACC, obviously, not Big Ten. Texas A&M with Trevon Ball. A&M's got to replace five offensive line starters, so Tro may start out there next year. But I think they're all good enough. But so they should have played better. And that's the bottom line. Whether that was individual coaching, whether that was the scheme and assignments, whether that was just there was no excuse for how they played, especially after they were just kind of so-so in 2024. And they did replace three starters, but you have to backfill that. And the guys that were highly recruited that were into their third year woefully underperformed, and all that. So we're going to talk about the offensive line tonight. That's not the topic today. I just wanted to kind of explain that because I don't normally like to say harsh, those harsh type things, because there's always a lot of reasons for failure in football. But and so you just blanket say, but it was embarrassing. It was embarrassing to the program, and it let the other positions, by and large, everything from conditioning to performance in games. Sure, there were some deficiencies here and there, and there were some times guys didn't play well. There's no doubt. But collectively, the offensive line, there was no excuse for how they played. And whether that was a ridiculous scheme or what they were asking them to do or coaching or just individuals at different times having mental error, whatever that was, there was no excuse. It was embarrassing for everybody else, I think, that put a lot of work into the season. And there's a new group now, the whole new coaches, new players. And the guys that are returning, to me, were not all, not the culprits. I know Josiah Thompson didn't play that well at times last year. Kind of had a regression. Shedd Surratt, for a true freshman, I thought was pretty good. Markey Anderson was just starting to play really well before he got hurt. Didn't see enough of Nolan Hay to know. Didn't see enough of Demola to know, but the guys that are returning probably, when you look back at it and you just break everybody down individually, the guys that were kind of the culprits have all left. So we'll see how that goes. But running back is today's topic, and it fits because you got to be able to block. I mean, all this is a moot point if you can't block. If there was a position last season overall, I'm talking about collectively, that was, and take quarterback out of it, because I know people go, what about Lenora Sellers? It's a different topic. We'll take quarterback out of it, non-quarterback position collectively that you're kind of disappointed in last year outside of offensive line, it was probably running back. And there's a reason there's a new running backs coach. I thought that there was a, you had all that with Rasul Faison, but it wasn't like he wasn't practicing. He was healthy and ready to go. Oscar Attaway started the season, and then went up and down the depth chart. I think Oscar sort of was what he was. Really good out of the backfield, good blocker. His snaps decreased as Fuller's increased. Rode with Fuller for a while, kept riding with Faison. The rotation left a lot to be desired. Isaiah Augustov played in 1, 2 games and then redshirted, so he was off the table. And then lo and behold, when Mike Furey takes over the offense, Juwan Howell gets out there. Now that I don't know that necessarily was a Furey decision or if it was Juwan practicing better, like Beamer said. I believe Beamer when he says that. But you kind of look at the skill set he brought compared to the others, and you could make a strong case. And I think a lot of folks agree with me for him to play. It wasn't just, oh, he was productive in a couple of carries. You watch it, what he did. Like I've talked about this play against Coastal, where he used some patience and then found the hole and burst through for about 9 yards. Kind of a guy, I mean, against Coastal, the first play, he's running down there blocking. I mean, I love Juwan Howell. I think he's going to probably be a factor, this year. But my question was, with your run game struggling as much as it was, why not try him a little earlier? Because Matt Fuller is one type of back, Juwan Howell's another. And then Rasul Faison's yet another. And it seemed like Faison, and I like Sewell. I mean, I thought, good player. But really, with how Carolina was blocking and what they were trying to accomplish in the run game, he was good for a nice run once every 5 to 7 carries. Other than that, it was tough sledding for him. And one of the things Darren Usher said, and maybe that's because, I mean, Sewell did get up to 215, 220, but. And had some physical runs, some violent runs at times this year. The Clemson game, I thought he had a good one. But, not the big physical back like you see around the SEC at times. And one of the things Darren mentioned in yesterday's interview was that was an emphasis, is to get, some big, he called them grown men, in the running back room. And you got a 9-game SEC schedule now, 10 tough games with Clemson, obviously still there. Your running backs wear down. That's the whole thing about that position, is they do wear down. And frankly, that's why the position value, both in terms of college football and the NFL, monetarily is lower. Because, you look at Rico Dowdle, undrafted free agent. The Cowboys, I guess, had some, I think it was Zeke Elliott still there. All of a sudden, legs get a little tired on your stud, and then boom, here's a guy from the practice squad that's fresh and gets out there and makes things happen. You see in the NFL all the time. And they go with two now. The days of the number one back carrying it the whole load are over in football. You need multiple backs, as Darren mentioned. And you got three returning, and then you hit the portal for three. And Darren's right. They're all physically bigger backs, with enough speed, according to what he said. And I think that when you look at it, I like Howell a lot. That's me. I'm not at practice. I know they really love Christian Clark from Texas out of the portal that they got. I've heard good things preseason last year about Isaiah Augustov, Matt Fuller, Ohio State. Some other schools wanted him out of the portal. Sam Dixon comes in from Ohio State. If he gets healthy and gets going, he's definitely got some talent. And then a younger guy, Jabri Coleman from Penn State, who redshirted last year, was a four-star top 200 guy in the country. All these guys around 220, 6 foot, 6'1". Some are 5'11". But, you watch it and you kind of break them all down and compare them, and they're all kind of similar. There's not, in my mind, and I'm sure many of you out there have your favorites. I think I asked this question on the show one day. as it related to Howell or Fuller. In my mind, I don't know who's going to start. I don't know who's going to be number two. I think it's going to be an absolute war with these guys, which is a good thing. I think Usher had a Muschampism and said iron sharpens iron in his interview yesterday. He wasn't talking about the running backs, but that's going to make everybody better. But I can't sit here right now on February 4th and give you an intelligent prediction as to who will come out of this as the starter. I do know this too. In Kendall Briles' offense, it's a two-back deal most of the time, but then they also will run in three. You run more plays, obviously, by going fast and running tempo. The more plays you run, obviously, the more you need to rotate your backs, the more carries they get. That's just football. And I think as happy as the receiving room is about that, and Lenore Sellers is about going to Kendall Briles, the running backs are probably happy as well. Although they were getting plenty of carries, maybe too many carries at times last season, in my opinion. So I don't know. I don't know who's going to be the starter. If I had to gun to my head, make a pick, and needed to be right about it and take my opinion out of it, I would guess Matt Fuller would be the guy that the staff would go with. If I had to pick me, I would probably go with my man Howell. I think too, though, there's a reason they brought Christian Clark in. They love the guy. He's proven, at least in one game, in a bowl game against Michigan, 105 yards on 20 carries. Played really well. Had a good game. I like him. His running style is similar to, there's been two Mike Davises that have been good running backs here. The first one was from Columbia High School, signed with Spurrier in his first class. That was 20 years ago. High three, low four-star guy, productive dude, though. Had a certain, I call it, this is not a football term, this is coming out of my brain. I call it a shuttle shuffle kind of back, where they're running, their upper body's almost still, but their feet are, like the Flintstones almost. And they're a little elusive with it, and they can find the hole. Not overly like, wow. They're not going to wow you, but they're productive and they can find holes and things like that. So the style, I watch Christian Clark, it reminds me of the first Mike Davis. I'm not saying that that's his ceiling or that's his floor or if he's going to be as productive or not as productive. I mean, that's just the style. And I think Mike Davis obviously was the first one, second one too. Well, they were productive backs in the University of South Carolina. But definitely the first, not the second. The second's not, that wouldn't be the comparison that I would have between the two. Matt Fuller may be closer to the second Mike Davis. So the second Mike Davis, the thing people didn't realize about him was he's a bigger guy, but fast. I mean, once Mike Davis too got into the open field, you weren't going to catch him. And he lasted in the NFL for a while too, which at running back, that's great. Ended up being better than James Davis. Remember, James Davis was his brother, played at Clemson, was a star at Clemson, but never really worked out in the NFL. But little brother Mike ended up being better. I'm not bragging or anything. It's not a Gamecock Clemson thing. I'm just pointing that out because it probably surprised some folks. Although Mike ended up being ranked higher, a little higher than James, or right in the same level as James at the end. He was a riser. He went to the Army All-American Bowl, and my guy Jerry Hamilton looked at him and was like, "This guy's a stud. Jerry's good at running backs, man." And so he was. He ended up being really, really good. But anyway, Christian Clark reminds me of the first Mike Davis from Columbia High. Isaiah Augustov is kind of a wild card here. Obviously, Kendall Briles recruited him at Arkansas. He's productive, redshirted last season. Led Colorado in rushing 2 years ago. So an experienced guy. Probably not a bad thing. They took the redshirt year just to kind of, because he kind of got thrown in the fire, didn't, was on the right on the border of redshirting at Arkansas his first season. Then was the guy at Colorado in a pass happy offense. And then last season, he had phase on, he had a kind of a crowded backfield. And I don't know that in practice or, didn't get a lot of game opportunity. I don't know that he took it the bull by the horns and was significantly better. And so if he's not going to play a whole lot, And you have other special teams options, which he was playing on some special teams. Why not just redshirt him? Shut him down. And so that's what they did. And so he's a wild card in all of this. And that would kind of be the fourth guy I would look at. And I'm not ranking them. I'm just saying he'll be in the mix too. If I had to put odds on it, and this is based on what I think the coaching staff will do, not my opinion, he'd probably have lower odds than Clark Howell or Fuller, but maybe right there with Clark and Howell. I mean, it's going to be a battle because all these guys are kind of the same. A little different style-wise, but they're all bigger backs, grown men, as Darren Usher talked about. Sam Dixon, who I mentioned earlier, is a player that, I mean, it's all upside for him. He's a player that had a really breakout junior year in high school, changed schools, got hurt, kind of had some injuries here and there at Ohio State, but he's been up there. One thing Darren pointed out, and Jamie also did, is these guys that have come from these blue bloods, and three of them, Texas, Ohio State, Penn State. I don't know that that's, and Darren agrees with me, it's not something you seek. It just kind of works out that way. But the good part about it is they're used to practicing against good players. They're used to competing in practice against good players. They're not going to come in and get shell-shocked by anything from a day-to-day standpoint, which is important as you prepare your football team. Sam Dixon, when he was in high school, explosive, violent runner. Just not a lot on him, frankly, from Ohio State. So, look, we'll see what he can do. I did mention special teams, and running backs are very valuable on your special teams. That's good. It's good that they have six now. So these guys can go out and participate and contribute and make a difference in the third phase, the all important third phase of the game, right? And then Jabri Coleman, looking at his high school film, reminds me of Isaiah Augustov a bit. Played at Imhotep Charter in Philadelphia, which is, I believe, where David Williams played running back at Carolina, transfers to Arkansas. I think got drafted after going to Arkansas, which is interesting. Arkansas and Carolina have had some players go back and forth through the years, but we all remember David Williams was a four-star recruit out of Philadelphia, late Spurrier, early Muschamp era. And that's Jabri is not, to me, not is more like Isaiah, not like David, but he's 6 foot 220. Obviously a player that Stan Drayton, the new running backs coach, liked because they signed him, and then he brought him to South Carolina. So, boy, the James Franklin firing at Penn State's kind of the gift that keeps on giving for the Gamecocks. If Jabri Coleman works out, that's good. And then Carolina was able to add Stan Drayton and Deion Barnes to the staff. Those are two very good assistant coaches that would have probably been tough to hire had James Franklin not gotten fired. So that's just a little aside there. That's worked out well for South Carolina. And they beat the rival in the Pinstripe Bowl, although not a lot of happiness about that. Clemson lost a lot of games this year, but in the game that mattered as it relates to this rivalry, they won by two touchdowns. So can't say much about that, right? But I think Jabri has a bright future. Sometimes in your redshirt freshman year, things get going. He was behind a lot of good players, a lot. At Penn State, they had two studs at running back. Singleton and Allen were outstanding. And then behind them, they had more. And he was just a true freshman. So interested to see kind of how things go with him. And you never know. I've seen talented young guys before in rooms at running back that end up passing, lapping the field and getting on the field. I've also seen it to where back in 2011, when the Gamecocks were they won 11 games, and Marcus Lattimore gets hurt, and Connor Shaw supplants Steven Garcia and was a first year starter. Brandon Wildes was the fifth team running back. And some of these guys are similar to Wildes. I don't know. I'm curious to know, like, because Wildes was kind of a Mike Davis one shuffle shift guy. But What Wilds had also was he was big. Mike Davis one was about 5'9", 5'10". Brandon was 6'1", 6'2", 220. But what Wilds had that nobody caught up on, including my dumb butt when I evaluated him, thought he was a fullback, was speed. Brandon Wilds was fast. He'd just shoot up in, Brandon Wilds fast back. I remember the second half against Georgia in 14. This guy, just burst through a hole, and you're like, wow, fast back. Very highly underrated player in South Carolina lore. Kind of like Rico Dowdle, if he'd have been stayed healthy. Well, he was healthy in 2011 as a true freshman, thankfully. But there were some seasons that he'd just been a little more healthy and gotten to get out there and get the carries in. Probably could have piled up some more yards, but. A lot of these guys are kind of similar to Wilds. I just don't know how fast, at the end of the day. But it's going to be an absolute war. Stan Drayton, this is not his first rodeo. It's not Kendall Briles' first rodeo. And one thing about Kendall Briles and this offense through the years, if you have three guys at a position that need the ball, they'll find a way to get it to them. And so that's good. But this is a big question mark. I can probably guess on a depth chart everywhere else and it'd probably be a little somewhat accurate. I don't think it'd be 100%. I don't think anybody would. Running back, I don't know. Shake him up in a box and pull him out. I would guess, I'll always talk about who's going to run out there first at spring practice. I'd guess that'd be Fuller. He started a lot of or played more than anybody else last year. But I don't know that for sure. I guess it would be Fuller, but what does Fuller need to work on? What does Howell need to what with Howell? Whatever's happening in practice may need to be cleaned up. New coach, new day for him. I think Stan Drayton can work wonders, fine tuning. Whatever he's doing, because it's hard to tell in games, especially when he's gotten to play. What exactly the reasoning is with Fuller, I think blocking is going to help. If you notice when Matt Fuller had a hole last year, he could burst through it and accelerate at the second level. 72-yard run against LSU will tell you that. But he's a guy that I don't know. There are some plays where they try to loop him, the fourth down at Ole Miss where he tried to run the jet sweep with him to the edge for the second time. First time they got five, they kind of caught Ole Miss off guard. Second time, oof, disaster. But when he has blocking, he bursts through the hole and accelerates. And I think that that's what's good about him. He's also a very physical runner that falls forward. Unfortunately, on some of those, gosh, remember against Oklahoma, they just gave it to him and there was no hole. I mean, you could only push the pile so much when there's three guys and everybody whiffs and all that. I think being a little more patient for him would pay off and all that. So we'll see. And I know Christian Clark, by the way, patience as a runner. I like that about him too. So that's going to be a war, folks. So that's my take on the running back spot and just going bigger and more physical. As Darren said, grown men. That's kind of in a lot of ways how teams get it done in the SEC. Okay, don't forget JC and Morgan. We'll talk about the SEC and all this mess in college football. The mess is about to come back because we're in the off season. They've already screwed the playoff schedule up next year. There's 30 days between the quarterfinals and or almost 30. 25 and the championship game. On what planet? Why? Well, why? And it's because the folks that, as I said before, the same folks that brought us the Real Housewives of New Jersey, the television execs, have decided that's the way to go. They're like radio consultants. It's just like they get paid an ungodly amount of money, blah, blah, blah. It's hard to, with the ratings like they are, though, it's not going to change because the money just keeps going up. Oh, anyway, we'll have to talk about that on JC and Morgan. That gets cranked up about 9:15, 10 o'clock, the morning show, the show after Sports Talk tonight. Don't forget Tailgate Talks. All right, folks, this has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you have a wonderful wide open Wednesday. Holla.